throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good morning, Western Oklahoma, Northwest Oklahoma. It is a Skinny on Sports on the Sports Animal. Jared Atha with you. Aaron Calc will be in here shortly. He has some in-office stuff to handle before he gets on in here. So I'm going to go ahead and take the show over and do it how I please. Thanks for tuning on in. It's a wonderful Tuesday morning throughout the area. A lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to go back and look at that top 100 list of college football coaches within the last 50 years. Who's too high? Who's too low? Are the qualifications even just for being on this list for those who are maybe too high or maybe not just for those who are too low? We'll dive right back into that coming up in the show. Also, we'll talk about the scheduling alliance between the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC. What does that mean for the Big 12? I think we know what that means. I think we know what the writing on the wall is on that one. We'll break that down. And does it even matter? Does it even compete with what the SEC is going to give us, what we hope is in the next year? Also, we'll even look at the Class 4A preview that the Oklahoman put out, I think, this morning, and kind of break that down, see what that looks like. I have not seen it. I think we will kind of discover that together as Aaron steps on in here right now. And we'll talk about that as high school football is really just around the corner. I mean, quite literally for us, Aaron, as game week is next Monday, like you said. Like, I mean, some say, well, actually game day doesn't start until you kick it off. No, our game week starts next Monday. Then we got to get in the mode of, okay, pre-game interviews. Do we have rosters? Does everything work? Do we have internet? All that stuff. Does the camera work?
I think we're already there, man.
I've been working on it the last couple of weeks, and there's still I do that to ease my anxiety so I'm not rushed. And then knowing this week particularly is going to be short for me, so I knew I was going to have a weekend to work on it. But now there are some things that are popping up. Like, no, I got to get this done. I got to get this done. We got to get that done. So you threw some stuff at me this morning. I thought, well, I don't know how we're going to do that, but we'll figure it out. So it's here, man. It's here. And we're going to be able to see all the games on BigElkTV.com, all the Elk City games. And we got, of course, the Merritt Oilers on ParagonTV.com. We'll have their football season covered. Then all of a sudden you blink and in 10 weeks it's basketball season. Small school basketball season that we like to cover. I mean, we're about to hit the ground running. We encourage everybody to download the Paragon app, follow us on the Paragon app and on ParagonTV.com, BigElkTV.com, all seasons long, and have fun with us. We can't wait to get it started. There, what I miss. I'm not used to opening the show. How you can find us?
You can find us on KADSAM.com. If you're traveling through and start to lose us, or if you're just out of the area, do that, or download that Paragon app that you were talking about as well. Miss the show entirely, you can go back and listen to the podcast. You can find that on KADSAM.com, or you can also find us on iTunes. If you do the iTunes route, hit that subscribe button, and then you're alerted when a new podcast drops each and every day. You can also check that out on the Skinny on Sports Facebook page. All right, so we started talking about, just a little bit before Jim came on yesterday, with this top 100 list of coaches over the last 50 years in college football.
Right.
And I looked at it even a little bit more closely, but there was one. I mean, it's hard to say when you're in the top five on this list that you're underrated.
Yeah.
But I do think there is a guy that's underrated at number five. And I think he's underrated because he did multiple things at multiple different schools. And now we're going to get to see a chance if he can do this in the NFL, and that is Urban Meyer at number five. I think that is too low for Urban Meyer, winning two championships at Florida, then going to Ohio State, going undefeated in a year where they were on probation and weren't eligible to win one, then did win the inaugural college football playoff to take home a national title there at Ohio State. No offense to Tom Osborne or Bobby Bowden. And I know the longevity that they were able to have is a little bit different than his. And maybe that's the, you know, the, you look, you know, just Osborne himself has almost 100 more wins, and Bobby Bowden has almost 200 more wins than Urban Meyer. But the ability to do it at that level at different schools, I mean, we talked yesterday. To me, that's what separates Saban and Bear, is that Saban has that feather in his cap from LSU that Bear never was able to do until getting to Alabama. And so for
winning follows him.
And Urban Meyer, listen, people forget what he did at Utah. 2004, there was more than three undefeated teams going into the bowls. They were two.
Right.
You know, in Bowling Green. I mean, everywhere he's gone, he turned around. 22-2 at Utah. Won two national titles at Florida. Won another at Ohio State.
Makes you wonder if he had stayed at Utah if the timing was right for, like, if it was Utah in the Pac-12 and Urban Meyer was there, would they be?
Well, think about that.
Perennial.
At that time, the battles you could have seen, for at least for a little bit, with Pete Carroll.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that would have been fun.
Because he was there 03-04. Those are, you know, two titles that got stripped away from the Trojans. One via the BCS and one via the AP in 03.
Could a knock on him, and listen, five is pretty high when you have a list of 101 coaches, but could a knock on him be that he was kind of a rambler, kind of a traveler, kind of a traveling man who just, you know, was at Bowling Green 2001 to 2002, Utah 2003 to 2004, Florida State 05 to 2010, and of course Ohio State, and then left Florida State saying, well, it's a health thing.
Oh,
left,
I mean,
Ohio State. Oh, well, that's it for me. Now he's in the NFL. I mean, could that have been maybe a little bit of a knock on him?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I just think he's a knock on himself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's so unlikable in a lot of ways.
It's true.
And then when you compare that to both Bowden and Osborne, who seem like, you know, the gentleman of the game type guys. You know what I'm saying? And especially, you know, Bowden. You know, Osborne was a little bit more crotchety. Bowden would seem like all kinds of fun, like your grandpa, like your cool grandpa that you'd want to hang out with.
Yeah.
Whereas Herb has always been that, I mean, arrogance just exudes off of him. But you can't knock what he did. 187 wins and 32 losses over those years.
Right.
At Bowling Green, Utah, Florida, in Ohio State, three national titles, and was able to win national titles at two different schools. I would put him behind Bear Bryant. I'd put him in number three, ahead of Bowden and ahead of Tom Osborne.
Yeah, if Bowden had won one, say, at West Virginia back in the 70s, he would definitely solidify himself right there at three. I can see that.
And you know,
it's not easy to go school to school to school and
it's
consistently
not,
win.
It's not. I mean, and I get that he got to go to Florida and he got to go to Ohio State, which the Florida that, you know, Spurrier didn't leave it right to him, but the Florida that Spurrier built back in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, all the way through the 90s, was a hell of a lot better place to coach than it was before Steve Spurrier got there. You know, and then, of course, the Ron Zook era was a travesty, and Urban Meyer turned it right back around. And, of course, Ohio State is Ohio State. But he also won at Bowling Green, and he also won at Utah. And Utah wasn't Utah then, if that makes sense.
Absolutely makes sense.
You know, he kind of got that
jump started.
We're talking
Utah Mountain West, not Utah
right.
Pac-12.
Got it jump started to where, you know, it was rolling, and Kyle Whittingham has done a heck of a job there to keep that kind of on that track. And so I think there's a lot to be said about what Bowden did, and that, you know, that streak of top five finishes, 14 straight in the top five in the final AP poll is unbelievable. Unbelievable. But
so we start with this list at who's too low.
Okay, hang on. Hey, by the way, I'm not seeing this yet.
What's that?
I'm seeing it on the text line. Did he just cut Tebow?
Yeah, Tebow's cut.
Okay, I missed it this morning.
Tebow got cut. He was cut when he missed that second block.
Boy, howdy.
That's rough.
I mean.
Yeah, that's not NFL quality.
I'm not sure it's Sarah Eagle third and fourth grade quality.
No.
Running around looking to not get hit.
I tip my cap to Tim Tebow for stepping out and trying this. You know, and he will go out gracefully. He won't, because that's just the kind of guy he is. But he really had no business even being on this team. But the only reason he was,
he had
the opportunity because of his ex-coach.
It is. I heard it.
And listen, I'm not going to knock anybody for trying something, trying to chase a dream and trying it.
But
it just wasn't right. Didn't work.
I heard one whale of an argument about this last night, driving home between Doug Gottlieb and Rob Parker.
Okay.
I mean, one whale of an argument. And unfortunately, it started out great, and as things tend to do, it turned into a racial thing.
Oh, well, here we go.
Whereas the only reason he got that chance was because Tim Tebow was white. And the truth of it is, the reason he got that chance is because he is from Jacksonville. He is the state of Florida royalty.
Yeah.
And it's because Urban Meyer was the coach. If Tim Tebow was black and had all those things on his side, he would have got the chance. It's just the circumstance happened to be that you don't think that if he had been able to succeed, that wouldn't sell tickets in Jacksonville, Florida?
Not just tickets, jerseys,
and T-shirts
and everything. Yeah.
And the truth of it is, he kept, you know, the argument was, well, nobody else would have got a spot on the team. Guess what? He didn't get a spot on the team either.
He didn't
get a spot on the team. He got the opportunity to compete for a spot on the team and didn't make the first cut.
Man, if Hard Knocks wasn't in Dallas, I would have loved to have seen the locker room footage of Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And that little process, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and having to see Herb
but
sit
here's
down
the deal.
With Tebow and cut him.
Yeah, here's the deal. He's cut, and after, what, the third episode of Hard Knocks, people would stop watching.
Yeah. Well, you know.
You know? Well, they would watch for Trevor Lawrence, probably.
So, anyhow.
But, that's what it is.
All right, what was your question before I saw that?
Okay, so we ranked him, or you started with him as being underrated.
Yeah, I think he's underrated.
Okay, who's overrated? It doesn't have to be top four, I mean, of this whole list. Who is way overrated on this list?
Okay, see, now this is where it's hard for me. My first inclination is one guy, and it's just because what happened off the field for all those years. But how do you differentiate? I mean, listen, if you mess up off the field, you mess up. It's like a sin. Not one isn't different than the other. It's still a sin, right? And so I can't sit here in good faith and just grill Joe Paterno and act like he shouldn't be as high as he is when, let's be honest, the king was cheating his tail off at times and got popped for it, right?
Right.
And so at that point then, you have to just go by what you did on the field, and the rest of it is the rest of it. I do think there's some inherent bias there that keeps certain guys in certain spots, you know? I mean, you can't tell me that Tom Osborne is a better coach than Barry Switzer. Barry whipped him over and over and over.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, it was the renegade program versus the squeaky clean guys that did steroids that nobody cared about back then. All of a sudden, as things start, you know, get further away from it.
Yeah, a diet of corn doesn't make you that big.
The program wasn't quite as squeaky clean as everybody thought, but they also didn't have a quarterback in handcuffs on the front of Sports Illustrated. I get it.
Yep.
So, I think, like I said, I think you have to, it has to go with what you accomplished. And to me, I'm trying to find, who was I? Yeah, Chris Peterson.
That's Chris Peterson
in the top 20.
That's a stretch for me.
I mean, look who's behind Mac. I mean, do you really think Chris Peterson is a better coach than Mac?
No.
Don James won a national title at Washington. Jimmy Johnson. I mean, you really think that Chris Peterson was better than Jimmy Johnson?
I think he's better than Bo.
Bo Schembechler?
Yeah.
You know, Bo Schembechler is an interesting one because if you look on there, what's he missing?
On the national title.
Never won one. It's pretty incredible.
What's Chris Peterson missing?
Chris Peterson missing a ton.
Yeah.
But you don't think of Bo Schembechler. When you hear that name, you think of, oh, yeah, he was a legendary national title winning coach. No, he wasn't.
No, but he won at a
high rate.
Institution, at a high rate and at Michigan. I mean, when we start talking Blue Bloods, you have to go up against Ohio State every year. And, you know, the legend that is Bo. Bo versus Woody, those were awesome. Not that I remember it. I was a little young.
You know, another guy that I would take over Chris Peterson all day long. He never won a national title, but Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech.
True.
Maybe Frank Beamer over Chris Peterson. I mean, Bob. I mean, come on. But he was the little engine.
I feel like Chris Peterson is only in this top 20 because of one win.
Yeah. I mean, and then they had the win against OU, and then they had the great season a couple years later.
They beat Oregon.
And they beat Oregon. They beat a really good, I think.
They beat OU. Even listed in the description.
But wasn't the TCU Fiesta Bowl? Was it a Fiesta Bowl? They're both run defeated.
Yeah.
You know, and they won 38 games and finished in the top 10 three times from 09 to 11, all 3 years. That's cute. For Boise State, that's fantastic. But when you're talking about, you know, the list of the last 50 years, I mean, come on. You know, a guy that he stepped into a great spot. And maybe the way his tenure ended is why he's down this low. But a guy like Dennis Erickson. Won two titles at Miami following Jimmy Johnson. Now his tenure at Miami ended pretty bad.
You got to remind me how that ended.
Oh, with the NCAA knocking on the door,
right,
and all that. You know, and then it kind of went downhill until Butch Davis was able to step in and start the resurrection, and Larry Coker. You know, and then all of a sudden it was back to the U for a couple years. But I mean, he was fantastic there. Fantastic. And then you go out and you win the Pac-10 at Oregon State. And you win the Pac-10 at Arizona State. It's pretty strong.
Yeah.
When you start comparing him to some of the other people in this list. And a guy that I do think is too high, along with Chris Peterson. And we had and this kind of dovetails back into a conversation on a list we saw last week about the underachievers. And that's Mark Richt.
Right.
Georgia was consistently pretty good all those years. And they've got two conference titles to show for the Mark Richt era from 2001 to 2015 at Georgia.
Yeah, they had a lot of patience with him.
Oh, they were pretty good all the time.
They were. They just probably they were thinking, well, next year's the year. We're pretty good. One year we're going to break through. And sometimes it's hyperbole to just say, well, we just need a new coach. Well, I guess in Georgia's case, they need a new coach. But guess what? They look like Georgia of the Mark Richt era.
I mean, Kirby Smart got them to a title
game. Yeah, and you know that newness was there, and got some recruits on the team. And but now it just feels like, well, looks like they're playing second fiddle to Alabama, and even Florida's catching Georgia.
Well, and they were close. I mean, 2012, the Aaron Murray year against Alabama. I mean, they were right there in that SEC title game, which if they win, they probably get a shot at Notre Dame, and they probably steamroll Notre Dame to win the national title in 2012. But they came up, 6 yards short there at the end. That not only kept them with the chance to win the national title, it also kept them from winning the conference title. And I think, for me, the reason why Georgia was so high on that list and actually the number one underachieving program in the last 40 years, it wasn't just that they haven't won a national title since Herschel Walker in 1980. It was that they'd only won three conference titles since then. I mean, right. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just that. It's three conference titles since 1982. And Mark Richt is the head coach, has to get a little bit of that blame.
But come on, it's SEC. It's hard to win the conference title in the SEC.
I mean, you can say that now, but what about?
I'm just throwing out the argument that you're going to hear if you bring that argument down south.
Yeah, I mean, and
especially
guess what?
In the state of Georgia.
And guess what? It was. It has been. There's been different times where Florida was great under Spurrier and great under Urban Meyer. You know, Tennessee with Fulmer was fantastic. Kids, Tennessee used to be good at football.
Yeah.
You know, Alabama, obviously, now. I mean, there's been some LSU in there. I get it. But that's why you're not as high on the list, and to me, too high on this list, is you weren't able to get it done with right there in the middle of it all. I mean, think about since 1980, okay, the last Georgia national title. Think about how many schools – that are, gosh, what do you think? I mean, just, okay, schools that border or are in the state of Georgia that have won a national title.
Since 1980?
Since 1980.
Like in football?
Like in football.
In my history, I don't know. Georgia Tech?
Georgia Tech won and won in 90.
Right.
Bama and Auburn have won one. They touched Georgia.
Florida
State, Florida, Miami, Tennessee.
The real kick in the teeth is how many Georgia players from the state of Georgia were on those teams. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Clemson South Carolina is right there.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is they are in the middle, in from their state and the surrounding states, in the middle of the hotbed of recruiting in the entire nation. It's not just Texas and California anymore.
No.
The Southeast has, in the state of Georgia in particular, has come a long way throughout this entire stretch of producing top-notch high school talent.
Yeah.
And Georgia hadn't won one since 1980, and Mark Richt was there for almost half of that.
Yeah, a lot of luck is involved, but a lot of it is just maybe missing out on one key piece that went to Florida, went to Clemson, does Tennessee border Georgia?
I'm sure it does. Just the top.
I mean,
it's all pretty close.
They're right there. It just always seems like low hanging fruit for them, but they just can't get it.
Here was one that he's going to have the same problem that Mark Richt has, and that is lack of conference titles. But some people got a bump for taking hard jobs and doing well. I don't think this guy got the benefit of that doubt. And I wonder how much last summer has taken the shine off of him in lists like this. But Mike Gundy at 65.
Mm. Think too low?
The one conference title. I just kind of spur of the moment reaction. Yeah. Just because how hard that job is. You know, it's outside of, you know, Bill Snyder and a couple of others. When you think of somebody turning a program into a totally different thing than it was when he got that job, Mike Gundy fits that bill. Now, sure, he had help along the way. From Boone Pickens' money and from Mike Holder's leadership in the athletic department. But, I mean, for that guy, the last decade, Oklahoma State has been the second best program in the Big 12. There is no doubt about that, consistently. But the problem is, who do you replace? I mean, you're not going to, you know, like Les Miles. Les Miles kind of started the thing at OSU, and Gundy took it and ran with it. Les Miles has a conference, or a couple SEC titles, and of course that national title in 2007. So it's hard to bump him. You know, Mark D'Antonio is 20 spots ahead of Mike Gundy with three conference titles in the Big Ten. You know, Michigan State, better job than OSU when they took over. Is it now? You know, Fulmer won a title. Johnny Majors won a national title. You know, Chris Ault. got to get the little guy in there. If you're gonna complain about him being too low, who does he pass? And if all I can do is say, okay, Gary Pinkel is one spot ahead of him. Shouldn't he be higher than that? How much of a slide is it really? And it probably isn't. But when I first see 65 for Mike Gundy, I think, ooh, that's a little bit too low. But now I've got to replace somebody with him, and it's just hard to decide who that should be.
Well, I see guys that I'll be honest with you, I've never heard because they're probably way before my time, like Earl Bruce, Jerry Moore. Jerry Moore get the nod because he was part of the team that at Appalachian State that beat Michigan.
Oh, I'm sure.
So he gets.
Yeah, and you're talking about App State was winning, you know, those one AA national titles in that run with Jerry Moore. I think you see that up here a little bit further. I mean, dude, think about this. They've got the new coach at Kansas higher than the old coach at Kansas.
Yeah.
Lance Leopold. Honestly, before I looked at this list, I forgot who the heck the coach was at Kansas.
I know.
And then I see the Kansas emblem. I'm like, oh, it's got to be Miles. Oh, no, Les is next.
Miles won 3 games total. But yeah, I see what you're saying, but they put his emblem next to LSU. Or the emblem
LSU.
LSU.
Right.
Yeah.
But then you look down at national titles, and this guy go 1-1, 2-3-4, 5-6 in the D3. So, I mean, he was great. But if you're going to say that, where's Klieman?
Yeah. I think the University of Iowa is getting disrespect with Hayden Fry and Kirk Ferentz way too low.
Yeah.
In my honest opinion.
Hayden Fry was barely ahead of Gundy. I saw his name.
61. Ferentz at 71. Now, Ferentz does not have one conference title.
Oh, man, did they win?
Since 99 to now, I don't think they have won. But they've always been consistently good. They have Rose Bowl appearances under his watch. And, shoot, you think Iowa State, they better be ready for Iowa every year, especially this year. But at 71, feels like that's way too low for Kirk Ferentz. For a guy that can consistently win at a place since 1999, that's unheard of nowadays.
Yeah, he's kind of the Gundy argument a little bit, even though Iowa was a better program when Ferentz took over than OSU. They've won, but they haven't won.
Yeah,
you know they won games, and you know it's funny because Ferentz, what 0-2 is in the Rose Bowl against USC, so you know a BCS bowl.
Yeah,
and then it felt like it was 8-4, 8-4, 8-4, 8-4, 8-4, and about the time the Natives were about to get restless,
sprinkle in a couple.
Bam!
Upsets.
There's an 11-1 or a 10-2.
Yeah,
and then oh, here comes some more 8-4s or 7-5.
He would win those games to silence those critics. You know, Ohio State would come to town, or Michigan, or somebody that was ranked higher or undefeated, and they'd hand them a loss. Because, I mean, was it Iowa City? Iowa City at night is almost like the Baton Rouge of the North, in a weird way. Mm-hmm. It gets real rowdy there. I mean, you know, not crazy rowdy like those guys down in Louisiana, but
it's hard to win.
It's hard to win, and it just seems like you'd see it. Oh, Iowa at night hosting Ohio State. Primetime game on ABC. I got a feeling about this one. And Kirk Ferentz always has a way to find the way to win those games.
Yeah, that's
and that's in the 70 range, though, I felt like it was way too low for a guy like that. But
yeah.
I think a lot of this is being weighed, this whole list, it's weighted by conference titles, national titles, and maybe not so much win percentage.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, you got Mike Gundy here. He got one conference title, but man, he's the winningest coach in Oklahoma State history, and he's in the 60s.
Yeah, but the problem is when you look up in front of him, it's hard to find a glaring weakness with a lot of these other guys. Where you just go, okay, move them. I mean, Shug Jordan. You ever heard of him?
No, you're George Welsh?
George Welsh is from Virginia. He was there forever.
What'd he do?
He won a bunch of games.
So does Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I wish they'd had these lists so you could see. I mean, like, okay, think about Gary Pinkel.
He played for how many conference titles? There's one. He played for like 2 in a row, both against OU.
And then he played for 2 in a row in the SEC.
This is true.
But I don't think they ever won one, but my recollection.
No, they never won one.
They never won one.
Not under his watch.
But Missouri.
Maybe he did really good at Toledo. I don't know.
I bet he did just to get the Missouri job. And I mean, Missouri was pretty good.
Oh, sure they were.
For those years. I mean, yeah. Heck, 2007, Big 12 title game, they're number one in the country.
Yep.
When OU beats them with Chase Daniel and Jeremy Maclin and that crew. And so, that you know, but if you ask me who was better, Mike Gundy or Gary Pinkel, I'd say Mike Gundy. And they were in the same conference at the same time.
I'd agree.
Yeah, that was the Orange Bowl. I don't know what I was thinking. Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
That was that Orange Bowl in USC. Yeah.
Felt like it should have been Rose Bowl.
No, I was sitting there thinking Orange Bowl said
no,
Rose.
No, I'm saying those are two teams you think would be in the
Rose
Bowl.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
That's why I said it felt like Rose Bowl.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, we can go on and on about this list.
It's a fun list, for sure.
It's pretty cool there's two OU coaches on here.
Yeah, and I mean, if you make it in... Honestly, I'm a little bit surprised not to see Lincoln Riley on this list already.
Quite honestly, yeah, I am too.
I really am.
At least we got Schnellenberger.
No, Howard. He wasn't an OU coach. That was a figment of your little kid.
Schnellenberger.
It was a figment of your little kid imagination that happened. Bobby Petrino and his motorcycle make the list.
Hey.
77.
And his neck brace.
You know, the more I think about it, the more I am surprised that you don't see Lincoln Riley on this list.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Again, if it goes by conference titles and win percentage.
He's already got more than Mark D'Antonio, who is 48 on the list.
That's all I'm saying.
17, 18, 19,
it seems
20.
A little opinionated, I guess.
I think there probably is. And well,
if it's one guy making the list,
here's the deal.
I kind of lean like it's more opinionated than whereas if it was a committee of 10 writers who put this together.
Being Bill Connolly, I bet he had a formula.
Oh, well.
He's more of the analytics formula type guy.
Okay. Yeah. I'd like to see that algorithm for this list then. Interesting discussion. You're reading something intently over there.
I was reading what he's saying about how he put it together.
Oh.
He just kind of put it together, it looks like. But it's only about on-field accomplishments. Nothing outside the field mattered.
Paterno.
Sticking with the college football talk for another segment. Reports came out this weekend that the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the ACC were discussing a scheduling alliance to combat what was happening with the SEC and the acquisition of both OU and Texas. You know,
did it make you giggle when you saw that?
I mean, I understand what they're doing. I really do, and it makes sense on some levels. Because the truth of it is, unless you start poaching from each other's conference, as far as those three conferences, unless you start taking the big dogs from each other, there's no one out there that makes the splash for your own league like those two did for the SEC. The SEC is already the power broker in college football as a conference. So I understand, I guess, the idea of it. Now, how does it work when you actually get it into practice? And I think, you know, Barry Trammell wrote an article about this, his Scissor Tales, today or yesterday maybe, about what this looks like and then what it does for those leagues and, more importantly, for the folks around here, what it does for the remaining teams left here in the Big 12. And so I guess start with what it looks like. I mean, you know, you're immediately going to think, well, this works really good for Notre Dame and the ACC. But the difference is there's a contract there. And it's just one school. It's one school that's an independent that needs games to fill out a schedule. So, of course, it looks like it's easy when you compare Notre Dame to doing it because they have to have these games anyhow.
Right.
And so instead
it's like
of having...
they've already had this in place.
That's right. Yeah. And so instead of having to scour the whole landscape of college football, they make a deal with the ACC to get six games every year that are just going to go on the schedule. Boom, there it is. And you don't have to find people to play. And so that's why that looks so easy, and that's why it works so well. And it does both. It does. It works well for both. They're in the conference last year. They're not going to be, and you know that's kind of a major hang-up, I think, with the rest of the dominoes falling across the country. And I think this maybe even signals to you that, hey, Notre Dame ain't going to want to do it. Otherwise, this doesn't happen. So that's part of it. But as far as it goes, as far as how this goes, I think it's going to be a lot harder than people think to put this together, because the way that the college football out-of-conference games have been scheduled, you're talking about there's already people on the books into the 2030s for a lot of these teams.
Yeah, but how set in stone are those? Well, we've seen
contracts
games,
can be broken.
Yeah, but we've
what
seen
does it cost?
Games that were announced that have been vacated for but, one reason or other.
But, you know, what does it cost to do that now?
I don't know.
And with...
I think the closer you get to the date, it's going to cost you more.
I do, too.
But like the LSU-OU situation, it was so far out. I don't know the ins and outs of it. I was told LSU wanted out for various reasons, and it was so far out there. I don't know. Did OSU or LSU have to sign a check?
That's what I'm saying. I think a lot of times when they break these are already they're contractual agreements between these schools, mm-hmm. and yes. And okay. with the way that a lot of these athletic departments are, the financial shape they're in coming out of the COVID year last year, it's going to be a lot harder.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot harder to talk into. Oh yeah, okay. Here's $2.5, $3, $4, $5 million to get out of a game when it turns out we need that. So that would be the first thing in my mind. How easy would it be to do when these schools already have these? And then of course, if you're talking certain schools, you know, are they going to try to, are these conferences like doing this to lock the SEC teams out of being able to schedule out of conference games? And if that's the goal here, what happens to Clemson, South Carolina? What happens to Louisville, Kentucky? What happens to Georgia Tech?
What happens to OU, OSU? No, OSU's in the Big 12. That doesn't make sense.
But I mean, these long-standing rivalries
right.
that get played every single year, does the ACC force their teams not to play SEC? That's not going to happen. Or if it does, it's not going to go over well, you wouldn't think.
Yeah, that wouldn't go over well. Because those teams would get a pretty hefty paycheck by playing these games. Playing these SEC teams.
Well, yeah. And
not only, not just.
And it's their main rival.
And their main rival, too. But, you know, you think people, you want to, if you're South Carolina or at Clemson, you want to replace South Carolina with, I don't know, Samford.
Yeah, but you'd be replacing them with Ohio State.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
You know, but in a good year, Rutgers in a bad year.
Yeah.
So does Clemson really want to take that risk of replacing their in-state rival with Indiana?
Yeah.
Or Arizona?
Yeah, and again, it goes back to everybody would have to sign off on it, don't you think? And I mean everybody. And think about that. That's a lot of schools, a lot of presidents, a lot of athletic directors, and even coaches saying, let's do it. Because you get one that says, we don't want to do that. And that's not what we signed up for when we
How would you like to be a Florida State fan? And you get told you can't play Florida. And instead you get to travel out to the Palouse and play Washington State.
Mm.
No thanks, man.
Yeah.
And so that it's a lot harder, I think, to make it work than it's going to start out being.
Yeah.
Because there's those certain schools that have those rivalries already there. Now, could it be more of an informal, hey, we'll agree to say five games a year or six? Maybe.
I think something like that.
But what does that do for TV?
Well, wouldn't you think it'd help?
Depends. It just depends on what the games.
Create some more interesting, juicier matchups in the pre-conference schedule.
I mean, that's the goal. But once again, if you're one of these, if you're Florida State and you get to keep the Florida game, and then they're going to ask you to play, I mean, At some point, it becomes detrimental to your season.
Yeah, yeah. You play Florida one.
You're playing Florida
week,
anyhow.
And then you turn around and have to play, I don't know, USC or Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah, woo.
And then play in the playing the ACC would be a cakewalk compared to some of that most years. But.
Well, for Florida State, not really.
I'm just saying.
Yeah,
you know, or Clemson losing South Carolina. So I think this is just kind of a reactionary conversation to try to figure out a way to do something.
Yeah.
I just don't know if this is going to be the thing that's going to get done.
The bigger news for me was when this news came out, not so much of what you're talking about, but wait a minute, what about the Big 12?
Yeah, and so
that's very telling to me is that the rest of these conferences outside the SEC are looking at the Big 12 like, we're just waiting for you guys to dissolve. I mean, you don't matter. And that's sad.
Yeah, and maybe, hey, we're not taking you yet.
Yeah.
Maybe we're exploring other options without having to take you. Because here's the truth of it. Moving forward, I think the college football, like the non-conference, it's going to be such made for TV because TV is controlling this. And I don't know how excited TV is going to get for these games between good teams and like those body bag games where teams just come to get a paycheck.
Right.
With the money that TV's dishing out and the amount of people that are cutting the cord, the money's not necessarily drying up, but it's not just flowing like it was at one point. And so in order to make financial sense for these networks, ESPN for sure right at the top of this list, they need big marquee matchups, both in the conferences and outside. And so to me, if you're the Big 12 schools remaining, first off, you're trying as hard as you can to get one of these other three conferences, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're trying to get in one of the other three major conferences. If that can't happen, then the first thing you have to do is bolster your schedule to make the Big 12 more enticing to the TV people.
Right.
And that's where Bedlam and some of those other games come in. I mean, if you're Oklahoma State and your conference schedule is going to be what it is, which we've already seen even with Oklahoma and Texas, not that appealing to the TV people because they wouldn't agree to renegotiate the contract early that would have been able to keep those other two teams maybe in line.
Yeah.
So without that, that means you have – I mean, Bedlam is already a pretty important game to that school financially. If Oklahoma State can't figure out a way to get in the Pac-12, Big Ten, or ACC – that game becomes almost a must financially to be able to generate the TV revenue that they're used to having. Otherwise, you're talking about, gosh, how much money you're going to lose a year? Go down from $35 million to 20 less on a TV package. And that's got to be the same. Everyone else in the conference or everyone else that's still here has to be thinking that exact same way. If we're not going to get paid what we want to get paid for our inventory of conference games, we have to raise the profile of those out-of-conference games.
I think the winner of all this would be the fans, right?
Heck yes. By the way, have you seen week one slate of college football?
Well, I know there's a week zero, right? I've seen
enough of week zero. Week one. The official.
I haven't. I mean, I can pull it up. And I know
I've got it right
I've
here.
I've glanced at it. Go for
it. I mean, I've got the some of the games that are on TV or that are going to be played.
Okay, tell me.
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games featuring ranked teams.
Okay.
Georgia-Clemson, Alabama-Miami, Penn State-Wisconsin, Indiana-Iowa, Louisiana, and Texas. You've also got LSU-UCLA. You got Notre Dame-Florida State. You've got Ohio State-Minnesota, and we got North Carolina and Virginia Tech. For the first weekend, that is phenomenal. It's normally...
It's been trending that way for a while.
It has, but the depth. You know, we normally get one good game a day.
Yeah.
You know, from Saturday through Monday night.
Right. That Labor Day weekend, yeah.
That's right. And there's way more than that this year. And even the ones that aren't ranked teams... There's some intrigue to it. Notre Dame, Florida State is intriguing. just because of the names. Now, will the game be any good? We'll see. But it's very intriguing. I mean, maybe one of the greatest matchups of uniforms in the history of college football would be the UCLA Powder Blues and the LSU Home Whites.
Yeah.
What an awesome, awesome look that's going to be, especially if it's in the Rose Bowl. And then all those other ones that we talked about.
Yeah, so, I know we're working Thursday night on the 2nd, but something about Boise State at Central Florida on a Thursday night sounds fun to me.
It does sound fun. But that's what's going to have to happen, I think, when you ask about the Big 12 and the remaining teams and what happens. You know, the first and foremost, any of them are trying to get into one of those big conferences. And I, you know, at first glance, this alliance thing that the Pac and the Big and the ACC talked about would seem like kind of the door slamming on those teams to get there. But I think once you talk about it, you start trying to figure out the logistics of it. I think those three are going to figure out pretty quick. This ain't going to work.
Yeah,
it's just not. And so, what's Plan B? And if you're OSU, Plan B is us in the Pac-12, or us in the Big 12, or Big 10, or the ACC. Is what you're hoping they decide Plan B is. Otherwise, you're right. I mean, there's, you know, what do you do? Do you merge with the AAC? Do you try to pick off four of their best teams and then load up the non-conference schedule as well as you can to make that TV deal more attractive?
Who is it more detrimental for, the Big 12 or OU in Texas, when I present the scenario to you? The Big 12 trying to stick together as long as they can to basically keep OU and Texas in the conference until, what, 25? Well, when that happens, I mean, or should the – what am I trying to say? Should these schools like Oklahoma State, like Kansas, TCU, all the others, should they be proactively looking for a new home?
Heck, yes.
Right, so my point is, is it detrimental for them to try to stay together just to stick it to OU and Texas to keep them here?
No, yes, if they have an invite. But the problem is right
because
now they can't go anywhere.
What if OU and Texas are like, you know, we're happy to stay right here and not sign a check. We will be patient and wait for our exit.
Which would be awful for everybody involved.
It would. It'd be really awkward.
It'd be really awkward.
Awkward and weird. But so no. When they go without signing a check, and then all of a sudden the – now Big 8 is looking like, well, what did we do that for? Because now we have no TV deals.
Listen, if the worst thing any of these schools that are left over, well, the 8 that are left over in the Big 12 right now could do is have an invite to one of those three major conferences and not accept it because they have some delusions of grandeur about the Big 12 being able to add value on a TV contract. That's... if that does happen to one of these schools, whoever makes that decision should be fired immediately.
Yeah.
Because the financial well-being of the athletic department and the university to some extent is way more important than either trying to stick it to your rival or some sort of loyalty that you feel to old-time conference mates. No offense to any of those teams, but that's out the window.
Absolutely.
And if I can go to the Big Ten, or I can go to the ACC, or I can go to the Pac-12, sign me up. All I'm waiting is the invite. Because as soon as one domino falls, then they all start to fall. And I think that's what you're seeing here with the three trying to make some sort of agreement, mm-hmm. is to not make that happen. But I think they're going to figure out pretty quick that it's going to be a nightmare to do, and then that may help these remaining schools in the Big 12 be able to get themselves to a better spot in one of the power of what's going to be four conferences across the United States in college football.
I'm honestly really nervous for OSU because this news came out, like I said, with no Big 12 mentioned. I thought that we would hear sooner than later that OSU and Pac-12 had a mutual interest, and it doesn't really appear that way.
It doesn't, but I also think that you're going to see these other three wait as long as they can
to see who takes
to
who
see
first.
Who takes who first.
Well, yeah. We all know who that might be.
Well, and the truth of it is, until the top domino falls, it's hard to kind of get everybody into a spot. And that top one is obviously Notre Dame.
Oh, well, yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Are they going to join one of these conferences or not? And then once you figure out what Notre Dame's going to do, then if you're the ACC, okay, we've got Notre Dame, which I would assume that's about the only place they could go with these contracts that they've signed, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, we got Notre Dame, West Virginia, you're right here in our backyard. Boom, there's the two. We've got to get to 16. Then you start scrambling around. Who does the Big Ten want? Well, there's only two that fit the academic profile of Big Ten schools, being an AAU-accredited school, and that's Kansas, and that's Iowa State. So if that continues, and that's what they're doing, then that's an easy fit there. And then four of the five others head out to the PAC. Or does the PAC want to try to coax a BYU and a Boise and just take two? You know, that's when it starts getting hairy for OSU. But the good news is for OSU, when you take away Kansas and you take away Iowa State from an academic standpoint, away from the Pac-12's opportunity, then it becomes about athletics. And OSU is at the top of that heap with what's left, and probably in the top of the heap anyway with everybody, mm-hmm. but for sure with what's left, with the way that they play the Olympic sports, with the way that they've been playing football, they're in great shape at that point.
Yeah.
Just a matter of, I really think everybody's just waiting on Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame, they...
And Notre Dame may not...
We're good. We've been good for a while.
You know, I would love...
And we have NBC.
Maybe, and see, that's the thing, though. We need to go see how much that's worth. Because I don't know if it's worth what the rest of these schools are getting from their conferences. Well, we're going to have to get to that 4A preview tomorrow. Not enough time. Question? Question on the text line. Oh. Is there any chance that possibly more teams would go independent instead of trying to join a conference?
Hard to do with the money.
The money. That's it. Because, okay, so Notre Dame, which I think we would all agree is the biggest brand out there, not in a conference or not in the Big 12. You know what I'm saying? Like of the, let's say there's nine free agents. Notre Dame's clearly the one. They signed back in 2016 their TV deal with NBC, $15 million annually. So at what point does Notre Dame look around and go, wait a minute? What?
Yeah, we could...
We're getting $15 million annually, and those teams in the SEC are knocking down 65 or 70?
Yeah, we can more than double our money even by joining the ACC.
Or do they go NBC? What is this?
Yeah, pony up. We need to restructure our deal here.
And so and that deal runs through the 2025 season, which is 1 year longer than kind of everybody else, right? Because everybody else, the 2025 season itself is right now the target date. And we'll see if that gets moved up through 2024. And then 2025, everybody's free to go. Yeah. Notre Dame signed through that year. I would imagine, and you know what? Maybe the money, maybe it's the prestige of being the only show in town on NBC means more to Notre Dame than an extra $15 million or what have you. But I think for everybody else, I mean, when Notre Dame's only getting $15 million, what are you worth? As an independent, I think that's why they have to have the conferences, because no one else can do it.
Yeah,
no one else is as valued.
Yeah, no offense to OSU, but
or anybody,
go to anybody independent. Left. You're not going to find a network that's going to take you on. And
well, and Notre Dame averages almost 4.5 million people per home game,
right?
As far as viewers on TV, and that's way up there.
Yeah,
for everybody. So they bring eyeballs. There's no doubt about that. I don't think that's a realistic option for any of those schools. You know, if you could put Kansas basketball with OSU football or something like, you know what I mean? Like with branding, maybe that works, but you can't because you don't, you know, it just doesn't, they're not going to pay for that. So got to figure out a way to get in one of those conferences. And if not, you got to figure out a way to schedule really strong in the out-of-conference.
Yep.
Or wait on Notre Dame to say, you know what, NBC, if you're not going to pay us $30 million annually, that ACC money's looking pretty good.
Yep.
And being being as we already played 6 games in the ACC, all we got to do is add 3 more.
Boom.
And then there you go.
Get a good payday. Interesting stuff. I'm ready to start talking about actual season instead of...
Yeah, the problem is this is going to continue
throughout
the season.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody have a great day. We'll talk high school football tomorrow. Skinny on Sports, Rider and Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!